Senate Revenue Committee on a kind of a sleepy Monday.
Raining.
Cold. About the forecast. Let's go. Not the revenue forecast.
Not the revenue.
So I'm gonna. Here's what we're gonna do today. I'm gonna open a hearing on Senate Bill 171. If anyone got cut off on Thursday, give them the opportunity, and then that will be all we do on that bill, which should effectively clear out this what is up this room when we do that. So I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 171, and is there any testimony or anyone who wants to testify on what was in the bill when we had a cut off? Great. Paul, we were just talking, so do you know if we went to the idea of just requiring regulated electric utilities to pay no taxes at all, do you know, is that an option, or is that, and then just saying that those savings would be passed on to ratepayers, is that something that you could legally do, to your knowledge?
Mr. Chair, keep in mind, of course, that the taxes would be state only, so they would still be filing federal income taxes, and there would be some decision as to how rates would be adjusted for those. The key issue on different tax rates, as counsel has told us, is that there has to be some distinct class. So there has to be a distinct class that can be measured and seen and objectively laid out so that there's not a discriminatory issue. But I think if it met that, there shouldn't be a legal problem with adjusting tax rates, whether zero or higher, based on that clearly defined class. And then in terms of the PUC, they would, you know, their rate decisions could be adjusted to reflect that.
Could reflect that. Well, if the PUC's listening, and I don't know, Senator Metzger, it's your proposal, so if there's any interest in that, that to me might be one clean way. I'm sure there's things I don't see, but one clean way of getting at it. You mentioned the true-up as perhaps another. We'll just keep this in committee and allow any ideas to come forward. Any other discussion on Senate Bill 171? Close the public hearing. There won't be a work session on Senate Bill 171. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2453.
First House bill.
Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Chairman Deckard. Committee members, for the record, I'm Elizabeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 2453 and the next bill you have, too, they're both Department of Revenue bills, and they're dealing with pass-through entity and the income from pass-through entity. And again, pass-through entities are like S-corporations, partnerships. So basically with House Bill 2453, it's extending the current law time period for taxpayers to claim a refund or be given a notice of deficiency for income gains, losses, deductions, or credits that are from a pass-through entity. It's allowing the Department of Revenue up to 3 years from the date the pass-through entity files a tax return to make a refund or send a notice of deficiency for income gains, losses, deductions, or credits that are from a pass-through entity, and it's effective 91 days after the end of the session. So basically the dilemma is that the Department of Revenue has a tough time auditing the income that is then reported, say from a shareholder of an S corporation or from a partnership, until that entity actually files. So basically under current law, taxpayers can't receive a refund after 3 years from the time that return is filed, or 2 years from the time a tax or a portion of the tax was paid, whichever period is later. But basically, if the S corporation or partnership doesn't file right away, then the Department of Revenue can't give a refund to a taxpayer if it's after 3 years. So, you know, an S corporation or a partnership may file, you know, 3 years down the road, and then they could have given a refund to one of the shareholders for taxes that they paid, but they are not allowed to under existing law. So this is just allowing more flexibility. It's allowing them, so basically this three-year statute begins at the date that the pass-through entity files a tax return. So that's the difference under current law. So this will allow additional refunds as well as claims to be assessed on taxpayers who have Oregon-sourced distributive income from pass-through entities. The overall revenue impact is indeterminate but minimal. We don't anticipate, you know, a whole lot of changes, but it just allowing the Department of Revenue some more auditing to be able to look at and compare that S-corporation or a partnership entity return with the shareholders' return for that Oregon source income. So this passed through House revenue and the floor unanimously, and it basically had no opposition.
Thank you. Deborah? Got your Portland Trailblazer colors on.
Oh. Sorry, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. I have no response to that one, Mr. Chairman.
It's dangerous ground right now.
Yes. House Bill 2453 was requested by the Department of Revenue. As staff explained, what we have now is a mismatch between statutes of limitations for individuals who may own an interest in a pass-through entity and the pass-through entity itself. The situation that we run into, for example, if you assume that I'm a partner in a partnership, I file my return on time. The department has 3 years, generally, to look at the return, determine that adjustments need to be made, and send me a bill for additional tax. If I have an interest in that partnership and I don't report the income, the department may not know about it. If the 3 years runs, the statute of limitations expires, the partnership then files its return and reports the income. The department can't go back then and adjust my return for the income that I didn't report, because that 3 years has expired. This would say that the department has the 3 years, or if the partnership doesn't file on time, it has 3 years after the partnership actually files its return to adjust the individual's return just for partnership items. So it doesn't open up the return for everything, but it would allow for the department to issue a billing for income that wasn't reported on the original return. By the same token, it does allow the individual partner to claim a refund if, for example, the partnership had a loss that the partner didn't know about, so they would have been entitled to reduce their income for that year had they known. They can come back and ask for a refund of overpaid tax, but again, just for items that are attributable to the partnership return. So we look at this as more of a matching of the statute of limitations and allowing for adjustments to take place when people aren't filing, when pass-through entities aren't filing their returns on time.
Right. Question for Ms. Buchanan. Thank you.
You're
very
welcome.
Much.
Thank you.
If you want to I have you signed up for the next one. I think we might just move this on. Close the public hearing, open a work session, and then House Bill 2453.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2453 to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger has moved House Bill 2453 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator George, would you like to do the honors on that bill?
Sure.
Great. Open a public hearing on 2454. What's that?
Chairman Deckard and committee members, with House Bill 2454, this is really codifying into law a Department of Revenue rule that has already been established, and it's due to a court ruling. So basically it's specifying in the statutes the allocation procedure for pass-through entities' income, gains, their losses, deductions, or credits for part-year residents and non-residents. So it's specifying that allocation to Oregon of income, gains, losses, deductions, or credit from a pass-through entity shall be based on a percent of the total days in a tax year that the taxpayer was a resident of Oregon for part-year residents, and then it's specifying that same income or losses or deductions or credits from a pass-through entity shall be based on the percent of total days in the tax year in which the taxpayer was an Oregon non-resident. So it applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2002. It also then provides in statute audits or adjustments to occur by the Department of Revenue for any tax years in which the tax return was under appeal or any tax year in which the claim for refund may be made after the effective date of this 2005 Act. So this basically will have no revenue impact because it is something that is already in law currently, and it's just putting that administrative rule into statute due to a court ruling.
Ms. Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. We did have a decision from the Oregon Tax Court regarding the allocation of income for a person who moved into Oregon during the tax year. Prior to that decision, we had interpreted federal law, to which we are tied, to mean that when income is distributed from a pass-through entity, such as a partnership or an S corporation, that the income is being recognized on the last day of that entity's year. So if the person is an Oregon resident, the last day of the year, and that income is distributed, then all of that income should be included in Oregon income. If they aren't a resident the last day of the year, then none of the income would be included. And the court decision said that actually we should be prorating that on some basis. In this case, it was an S corporation, and they allocated the income on a per-share, per-day basis. So we adopted an administrative rule, as staff indicated, to reflect that court decision, and this bill would put into statute the provisions that require allocation for income from an S corporation or partnership when a person moves into or out of Oregon during the tax year. So it's more of a reflection of their residency during the year, and the income then reflects that residency by being prorated.
So I'm just trying to imagine the scenario. What's a good example, I guess, of a pass-through entity, and maybe walk us through what that would look like all for right. this pass-through entity that spends a good portion of the time as non-resident?
Okay. Mr. Chair, if you go back to the previous example, assume that I own a partnership interest in a business that operates only in New York City, and I live in New York mm-hmm. during the year. Midway through the year, I move to Oregon, and I become an Oregon resident. That partnership has no activity in Oregon at all. So prior to the time that I moved here, Oregon had no ability to tax me on that income. Once I've moved to Oregon, I'm now an Oregon resident. I'm taxed on all of my income. So the question is, how much of that partnership income should be picked up in Oregon income when I become a resident midway through the year?
Mm-hmm.
Prior to this decision, we would have said, you moved to Oregon during the year. You were an Oregon resident the last day of the year. So all of that New York income comes into Oregon. This court decision and the bill would say you look at the time that you moved to Oregon. Prior to the time you came here, none of the income would be taxable because it had no connection with Oregon. Once you've moved to Oregon, then you're going to start picking it up in Oregon income. So if you move midway during the year, you'd pick up half of the income as Oregon income.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, if you're an Oregon resident and you have a partnership interest in an Oregon business, it's only operating in Oregon, then and you move out of Oregon during the year, all of that income is still going to be taxed because it's related to an Oregon activity. So that's Oregon source income. Moving out of Oregon during the year still means that it's all going to be taxed to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a way of separating the income into residency and non-residency periods, but still recognizing if it has an Oregon source, all of it's going to come back to Oregon. Did that help at all?
So it just seems to me, although I'm just guessing, that there would be a revenue impact, a decent revenue impact, but I'm just guessing at how many S-corps or pass-through entities actually find themselves in that scenario where they're moving into the state midway through the year.
Mr. Chair, it will have a revenue impact, but there will be winners and losers.
Mm.
Prior to the court decision, a person who had income from a pass-through entity that was non-Oregon source, so let's go back to the New York example. Assume I'm an Oregon resident. I have an interest in a New York partnership that has no business operations in Oregon. As long as I remain an Oregon resident, all of that income is going to be taxed to Oregon. If I moved out of Oregon December 1st, prior to this decision, we would have said none of that income now would be taxed by Oregon because you're not an Oregon resident the last day of the year. Under this bill, 11 months of the income would come back to Oregon and be taxed to Oregon because I was a resident for 11 months during the year. So that would be a positive revenue impact for us. On the other hand, someone who moved into Oregon December 1st, we wouldn't be picking up all of the income. We would only pick up 1 month. So in that case, it would be a revenue loss. Mm-hmm. So you have offsetting situations, and that's why we're thinking it's probably minimal, because you have those different gains and losses from the bill.
Correct.
And Chairman Deckard, just so everyone's clear, I mean, what Deborah has described is really the revenue impact from the court ruling, mm-hmm. not from this bill itself. Without this bill, if you don't pass this bill, their current law is an administrative rule. So, and that's basically what you have and what Deborah was describing. But the court ruling itself, yes, had definitely pluses and minuses to the state revenue from these S corporations treatment. But this bill is just codifying into law their rule due to the court ruling. Mm-hmm. So that's why it has a no revenue impact.
Mm-hmm. Questions for Beth? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2454. Open a work session on House Bill 2454.
Sure.
Senator Charles Starr.
I move House Bill 2454 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2454 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Senator Starr, do you? Great. That is it. We are completed with our schedule and adjourned till 9 a.m. on Tuesday.